Hello and welcome to the show. If you're enjoying it and want an ad-free experience, consider signing up for the Patreon, patreon.com/the101podcast. Get early access and exclusive content on there as well for less than the cost of a cup of coffee. Links to ways of supporting the show are in the description. Thank you so much for listening and enjoy this episode.
Welcome to the One-on-One Podcast with your host, Juan Ayala.
Okay, so nightmares. Nightmares are almost always what I call a soul fragment, but it's a piece of you that you denied at some point. So, or something that you, a memory that was traumatic and you got to heal. When you have a nightmare, like now my relationship to nightmares has changed. Cause first it was like, it was a lucidity trigger. So I'd have a nightmare and I'd be like, I'm dreaming. Then I would look at the nightmare and then it would kind of like stop and look at me like, what are we doing now? And then I would change the dream. I realized that that's not me facing my problems. So now when I have a nightmare, I look at it. Sometimes I'm not lucid, but I realize on some level I'm dreaming. I'll stop if it's chasing me or whatever. I stop and I look at it and I'm like, what are you trying to teach me? And it usually will do the same thing. It won't say anything. So what I learned was that that's a soul fragment. That's a piece of me that we compartmentalize, right? Anytime you compartmentalize and you break a piece of, you chose to do X instead of Y. And so that part of you still exists. The one that made the other choice, the part of you that made a bad choice and you don't want to think about that anymore because you're not that person anymore, but that person's still part of you. So Jung always talks about reintegration. And so these are opportunities for you to reintegrate pieces of you because that's where your power comes from. It's not from denying the person that you were. It's from seeing your shadow, seeing what it was in your life and what it was worth to you and what it taught you, being able to live with that as a part of you and forgive it.
Welcome back to another episode of the One-on-One Podcast. I'm your host, as always. Make sure to follow the show on social media at the One-on-One Podcast, tjojp.com. Make sure to get a copy of the Occultist Monday. Got these professionally printed. Have the Homunculus Edition, 88 pages of it. You can find that on the Ko-Fi store or on tjojp.com. Follow me on Twitch and on the backup YouTube channel, One-on-One Media, streaming every Tuesday at 6 p.m. Eastern. Links down in the description as always. And joining us for the first time ever on the show, and hopefully not the last, Abby, how you doing?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm doing all
right.
Thanks
for having me, by the way.
Yeah, for sure. I connected with, I forgot where I had said something about a dream interpretation and analysis. And I think it might have been on one of the Tuesday night streams. And I guess Owen, I think Joe Roop told Owen, and then Owen pointed me over to you. And he's like, hey, check her out. So here we are. And do you have anything you want to plug? Any websites? I know you've done a series with Owen and you're on the Secret Society of Good Guys every, what is that, Friday night? Very late.
Every Friday, every Sunday is ladies' night on Secret Society of Good Guys. And we are going to start our lodge meetings on Wednesday nights during prime time soon.
Bible study.
We're a real secret society, so
I'll post the links for that in the description. But yeah, we're going to be talking about dreams today. Do they mean anything? Are they real or are they just more fake and gay? Because I mean, I think we all dream, and not just like dreams of having goals and things, but it seems like the AI, I'm sure you've seen the videos where you're looking at the AI and it keeps just morphing and morphing and morphing into like something else that you don't know where it's going. And I feel like AI nowadays is capturing what it feels like to be in a dream sometimes.
There's so many links between AI and dreaming that Thomas and I kind of explored. We were kind of putting it together and it was kind of eerie when you start it just leads to the whole this is a simulation and this is all fake.
Before we jump into it, can you tell us a little bit about yourself, Abby? Because I know you're a bodybuilder, and I know you're in the groups of right Paranoid American and everybody else. And unfortunately, when you're in this group, you're probably not normal. So what got you started in
Abby Normal
and all of this sort of stuff? Like, what got you interested in this?
Just years of trying to figure myself out, you know, trying to figure life out and trying to figure out why I was always fucking everything up. And then I got into meditation, and through that I found reality transurfing. And just because this guy who was doing guided meditations just kept talking about this book, and I was like, okay, I need to read this book. And it's quantum physics, and very, very much based on the Carlos Castaneda sorcery. But it makes it so practical that it doesn't seem like magic. It's obvious, like that's just the way things work. And when I started applying it to my life, and even retrospectively looking at my life through the different lens, I could see why things happened the way that they did. And through that, you know, you do start to see the magic of this place. You start to see how it's not as concrete as we believe. And that really got me into dreaming, because one of the fundamentals of reality transurfing is learning to lucid dream. Because when you can control your dreams, you learn how to control reality. So it has a direct correlation.
I've never been able to lucid dream, and I am familiar with the Castaneda character. I've been meaning to jump into that whole thing because it was like a cult that he was running, and I think his wife went missing or something like that, and there might have been foul play. So I don't know. How much of it do you know?
Most of it. You know, I know all the back history. I know, and really, because you can get into his life and you can get into the fact that he was a liar. But if you study the sorcery principles, one of them is the art of stalking, and the art of stalking part of that, because there's two paths of magic, which is dreaming and stalking. And in stalking, it's
like you follow somebody, you're obsessed with them stalking?
Not like that, but sort of like that. Like, it's almost like LARPing. You're learning to shift your, what he calls the assemblage point. So you're learning to like shift realities. So you learn, like you can stalk a cat. You can sit there and watch how a cat walks, and then you can learn how to walk like a cat. You can, you know, watch an old man or a homeless person and watch their body language, and then you start to act like them. It's more along lines of studying and then becoming. But there's magic to that. So I forgot what my point was with all of that, though. Oh, but one of the fundamentals to sorcery is, especially for men, is to deleting your personal history. Because when you tie so much to your personal history, you're really kind of stuck in your ego and you can't go further. So he was the master. He did it beautifully. He deleted his personal history. That's why everybody's like, he's a liar. He did this. He did that. But the one thing that I know about him, and the reason why I'm an advocate of his, is that I started with his first book, but it's kind of boring because it's his dissertation. And it's really like, if you're into learning how to do alternative drugs, then great, start there and don't go any further. But as I was reading the first book, I stopped. And then years later, when I got into dreaming because of reality transurfing and how much they talk about Carlos Castaneda, I read The Art of Dreaming. And this came out before any book on lucid dreaming. This came out before lucid dreaming was a term. This is back when science said lucid dreaming wasn't even real. And he taught you how to do it play by play. So, and he calls them the gates of dreaming. So there's 7 gates of dreaming. He teaches you 4 in that book. And I had already done a lot of these things. So to me, it was like, oh, this is real. This guy knows what he's talking about. All of it was real. So I didn't need any validation beyond that. And then I went back and read the books, and every single one of them is very profound. You just got to understand that a lot of people are like, oh, it's fiction. he was doing it in a magical place in what they call the second attention. So he's seeing things that aren't there. So it's not going to be like a science manual.
And the Gates of Dreaming, is that in The Art of Dreaming or is that in Castaneda's work?
That The Art of Dreaming is by Carlos Castaneda. So
okay,
yes.
So that's by him. Okay. Did you join the cult?
It's like his ninth book. Oh, I'm not a joiner. Unless it's the Secret Society of Good Guys. I joined that. So
yeah. So he's got nine. All right. So, I mean, that's deep then because I can't. I was going to say I could read some of them, but it's just too much.
Oh, there's more than nine. There's like 14. And then two of his apprentices, female apprentices, actually wrote books too. And they're pretty powerful as well.
Interesting, because I've looked into the art of memory, right? So dreaming, I would consider dreaming and memory kind of sort of in the same kind of field, because they say that dreams are what your brain unloading information in the background, I guess, as you know, to be able to, what the hell is even dream? Let's look it up. What is dreaming according, like, the official definition? Because these are things that, you know, we talk about and you don't really experience. I hate when it uses the word in the definition. So dream, experience dreams during sleep. Indulge in a daydreams or fantasies about something greatly desired. A dream is a succession of images, ideas, emotions, and sensations that usually occur involuntarily in the mind during certain stages of sleep. Humans spend about 2 hours dreaming per night, and each dream lasts around 5 to 20 minutes, although the dreamer may perceive the dream as being much longer than this. Okay, so yeah, again, it's part of the mind. And one thing that I can never do in a dream is load a gun. I can never load a gun for whatever reason, or cock it back or do anything. It always either jams up, or in my dreams, I never have the right ammunition. What does that mean, Abby?
I never have the right ammunition.
I never have the right ammunition. My guns are never loaded in my dreams. And when I try to you know, load the gun, to pull the slide back, to put the chamber, the round in the chamber, I can never get it to work. It's always jamming.
Well, to fire a weapon, you know, like a gun, that would be an offensive move, right? And if it's always jamming and you feel like it's always, like you can never cock it back, you can never fire it, you feel, I would say, that when you're having those dreams, and I don't mean this all the time, but whatever happened around that time or whatever is happening over the next couple of days, you're feeling almost a lack of power. Like you can't be on the offensive. So, I mean, just outside looking in, that's what I would say, is that you're kind of feeling a little bit powerless in the situation.
Yeah. I was hoping it didn't mean that I was gay, but yeah, no. So I am in a situation where I am a little powerless, with being with the working with local governments, right? The county and code enforcement, like stuff I do property. So yeah, sometimes you can't go on the offensive, because if you piss these people off, they'll make your life a living hell. I mean, and the thing is, it's all you, our taxes pay these people. So sometimes what I'll do is, if I'm replying back to an email where I'm getting heated for whatever reason, I'll type the email out, but then I'll just leave it in a draft to like the head of like the planning division somewhere. I'll be like, you know, like I'll just go off, and then I draft it. Cause I go, if I can send it, sure, I'll get whatever I want to get off, you know, my chest at the time, but will it do me any good in the long run? Right. Cause sometimes you got to play ball with these people, even though you don't want to. So that's what I've been going through in my life. So maybe it has to do with that, right?
I would say that's directly related right there. Your answer, your own question.
So, yeah, no, I never thought about it like that. So dreams do talk to us in a certain type of way, if you're able to remember them, because that's one of the things. So
yeah, but that's the, okay. So getting into what is a dream though, like, so we can look at it as many definitions as you want, but if we get Jungian here, he calls dreams, you know, the dream space, the collective unconscious. And you know about memory palaces and memorization and all of that. And we do know that this is part of dreams. This is not all of it. But part of dreaming is it is memory storage, because we can argue all day that you store memories in your brain, but your brain is actually more like a radio antenna, okay? And the collective unconscious, the dream space, is a real place. It really actually exists, and dreams are real. And the way I can tell you this definitively is, think of the last time you went to the bathroom. But if you go to the bathroom in a dream, you don't have the foggy memory like you just tried to remember the last time you went to the bathroom. It's clear as day and you were there. You don't do that with memories. Memories are not that crystal clear. Mm-hmm. You're actually in a place. You see the difference? Yeah. Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So this is a real place. And it's what in Reality Transurfing, he calls it the Eternity Archive. So it is infinity. It's every memory of every person that's existed on this planet. So, and Jung called it the collective unconscious, and it's collective because that's where we all store our memories, okay? And it's every past, present, and future that's ever happened, and all the stuff that never happened too. But it's like a film roll archive. So that's why sometimes in a dream, have you ever been somebody else in a dream?
Not that I can remember.
Have you ever looked in a mirror though?
No.
Look in a mirror in a dream, and I'm going to suggest that to you and to the audience. Try to look in a mirror in a dream. And just by me suggesting it, some of you will do it like almost immediately. When it was suggested to me through Reality Transurfing, I did it that same night. And I looked in the mirror and my face changed 5 times, and none of them were me. And the last time, my eyes went to the side of my head and I kind of looked like a fish. It was this weird, weird thing. But I've had dreams since then where I have a baby in my dreams a lot. And so I'm holding a baby, and it's like a little, you know, black haired baby. And I'm looking at her, and I go and I look in the mirror, and all of a sudden I'm not me. I'm the short haired, curly haired, dark hair woman in a black polka dotted dress. And my baby doesn't look like she looks like in my arms. In the mirror, she's a redhead. And so we're watching somebody else's film roll, or we're actively inside somebody else's film roll inside the Eternity Archive. So I was lucid and I knew what was happening, but I was experiencing somebody else's memory. Like she was picking out like dishes in China for her home. That was really weird. But so in that sense, everyone has little sectors of this space, right? And we all tend to go back to the same places over and over again. So this is where like dream hackers, they get into mapping their dreams. So instead of worrying about what the symbology is of the dreams, they're worried about the location of the dream. Because if you can keep mapping and put in, all of a sudden, if you draw your dreams and you keep drawing them, you realize how they all connect. Like this place connects to this place and it connects to that place, and you could actually put it on a map. And the more you do this, like you'll have explosive dream recall, like you, where you remember every dream you've ever had. And that's what I was doing it really well for a while. And then I kind of got out of the practice, but I still write my dreams down. But
have you ever done the skull fuck method?
No, I've heard you talk about this, but talk about it because it's really interesting.
So a couple of things, because I'm almost done with Journeys Out of the Body, I believe is the name of it, by Robert Monroe. And it's reminding me of when he possesses that other guy on the other side, and then like his family, he goes through like the guy's life. He's like, I took over the I and the I am, you know, I took over the him when he was doing this, and then when he was doing that. And he saw like a progression of the dude's life every single time he would jump in his body in this other place that had technology, that had infrastructure, that had buildings, that had everything. And here he was borrowing somebody's body. And it's like, does it matter if you're laying on your, because I sleep on my stomach. Does it matter if you're laying on your back or if you're on your stomach to dream, or if you're a side sleeper?
Dream yogis would say yes, because there is such a thing as called dream yoga. And so they'll say like one side is more memories, one side is, I don't remember. But yeah, I didn't really get deep into dream yoga because I wanted to go beyond what dreams mean to the art of dreaming, to actual lucid dreaming. So for a while, I didn't even care about the content of the dream, but I realized, okay, this is the other thing. So some of it is memory storage, but a lot of dreaming, your body has zero way to talk to you until it's hurt, right? When it's hurting, you know it. But at that point, you already have dis-ease in the body. And the and sickness, and it causes disease, right? But what it comes down to is that you store all your emotions in your body, because emotion is supposed to be energy in motion. And when you don't, like when you hold your breath because you're upset or whatever, you store it in your body. These electromagnetic waves should be moving out through your body and out. But we store it and it clogs up our fascia, so our electrical system, which is what, like Chinese medicine, they do acupuncture meridians, and that's what that is. It's your electrical system. We are electrical beings. So your dreams will tell you, like they'll give you signals to where you have trapped emotions in your body that you need to get out, like from memories that you've never really processed the emotion to. So a lot of times it's your body signaling to you what's going on and what you need to deal with, or what it needs, because it doesn't have words. So it'll use metaphor in a dream. Like if you want to pull up that one dream, the one with the ley lines, the weird one.
So yeah, I'm gonna have to check out this book, The Art of Dreaming, because again, Castaneda, I've been told bad things about him, like, oh, he was a fraud, he was a hack, he did all this stuff. And this Don Juan Matos, it's like the existence of him, you know. Was he a real guy? Was he an egregore? Like, you know, what's going on with this? But it seems like he was tapping into something that a lot of people have talked about. You got Carl Jung, you got Robert Monroe. This is stuff that these guys were doing. They just had different names and different interpretations for something pretty similar. I mean, the Greeks did dream incubation, and now you're talking about dream yoga, which I had zero idea of. But if you look at the concept of yoga, it's about body mandalas, is about putting your body in a certain position to open yourself up. Now, what's going to come in is a whole other can of worms, but again, it is a concept. So I'm just learning new things every single time. And dreams is one thing. Memory is another one of those things. I recently did an episode on, for the patrons, about William Shakespeare, Francis Yates, and William Shakespeare's Globe Theater that Robert Flood had created his memory emblems and seals, allegedly from one of the reconstructions, because the whole thing about the Globe Theater is it's one of the most famous theaters, but we don't have any drawings or any records of it. So it almost feels like William Shakespeare's Globe Theater was this other realm, was a sort of memory palace, right? Because if you look at the history of it, they started doing private plays for certain people behind closed doors, and the different houses of actors were at war with each other. So I speculated that these were actually secret societies, and they were doing occult magic behind closed doors, because the whole point of the Globe Theater was that it transformed theater for forever. And it evolved to what we see theater, like a movie theater nowadays. And it was literally created to certain Vitruvian specifications in order to amplify the consciousness of the person, the observer. So again, it goes super, super deep. But again, Frances Yates talks about the art of memory, and she goes super hard in the paint with that and how it links to William Shakespeare. So a lot of people talk about him being fake, you know, he was never real. Maybe not, but we have concepts from a group of people or from somebody that came from somewhere. So
yeah, and it's powerful. So it doesn't matter.
Absolutely.
Don Juan, whether he existed or not, which I do believe he did, I believe he left this realm.
He figured it out.
Whether he exists or not, yeah, it doesn't matter.
Yeah. So
because try the art of dreaming. just start and try the things that they're talking about, and you'll watch it happen.
So I've tried two dream recollection memory techniques, I guess. Well, more for dreaming. So obviously there's the Mind Palace one, where you create a building And according to everyone who was ever into it, these were real places. These were real palaces. These were based on real places. And you build a building, and within that building or the decor or wherever, you start placing ideas and concepts, and you're able to then recall. So that's where the whole saying, oh, in the first place, you know, that's where that, because it's in the mind palace. Wow. In the first place, in the mind palace. So that's where that comes from. And so I've done the memory palace technique. And the two other ones that I've done, one of them is for memory. The other one is, they're kind of both for dreams. The one of the ones that was taught to Ronnie Pontiac by Manly P. Hall, and he talked to me about it, was the Pythagorean recollection. And what you're supposed to do is when you lay in bed, you replay your day backwards, and you try to remember your day all the way backwards. And you do that because allegedly the Pythagoreans practiced this. They were, again, was it all goes back to memory and to mathematics and to all this. So you replay your day backwards, and you're going to get better and better and better at it. And this is supposed to help with memory retention. And it helped me with dream memory, you know, remembering my dreams. That's the one. And then the other one that is really interesting that I've talked about, I haven't talked about it in a while, but I'm going to read it here from the website I got it from. So let's see here. I actually had sent SB Alger an email about it. So let me pull up the link there, because it sounds really bizarre, and it is. Again, you don't have to use the imagery that I'm using in it, but just it works. Like I don't know what to say. It works, right? So let's see here. See if I can find it. I can't find it. Oh, here we go. I think I found it. Nope. Goodness. Yeah, I can't find it in my email. That's crazy. The powers that be.
Okay, this is what's really trippy, though, because what you were explaining, like playing your day backwards, that's what the dream hackers, who are also like huge followers of Carlos Castaneda, call the lazy recapitulation. Because in order to have dreaming energy, you have to recapitulate your life. Like, so when I'm talking about, you know, like emotions being stored in your body, the hard way of doing it is to like think of every person in your life and go through every memory you have with them. And you do this breathing technique where you turn your head from the right to the left. Mm-hmm. Like you inhale when you turn your head from the right to the left, and you exhale in the middle. And you just keep going until you've done every person in your life. But the lazy recapitulation that dream hackers found was that if you do it before bed and you play your day backwards and you do the same thing, so you're doing, which Carlos Castaneda basically invented EMDR therapy before anybody else ever, before the people who did EMDR therapy did it. So that's what this is, like turning your head side to side and into the middle. But
that's movement desensitization and reprocessing therapy is a mental health treatment technique. Involves moving your eyes a specific way while you process traumatic memories. EMDR's goal is to help you heal from trauma and other distressing life experiences. Wow.
Yeah. So if you play your day backwards while doing this, and you get all the way to when you woke up, but the key is to then play it forward, because then you hit everything else. And if you happen to like get into a memory during the day where you're like, I was making peanut butter toast, and then you have a weird memory that comes from that, that's something else you need to recapitulate. So you just go into it really quick and you do the breathing thing and get the memory, like get the energy out of it. And then until you get to the beginning of your day, then you play it back the other way, and you'll remember almost everything. And the point of that is that then when you dream that night, you aren't spending any time at all in the dream space storing memories, because you've already done it.
Mm, so it's like...
So you free up your dreaming energy.
Yeah, you're RAM.
So that's why you're able to remember your dreams better when you do it.
So here, I'm going to read it. I was able to find it. Okay. And apparently this is a... This is a magic technique. I've seen it under chaos magic. I think sexual gnosis is one of the other ones I saw, some other stuff. So this is a sort of magical technique. Now, it's called the skull fuck. an exercise in dream recall. And the way I stumbled across this was I have this hard drive with like a whole bunch of esoteric books and occult literature. And I was trying to come up with like a new idea for an episode or something. So there's a random button that you click in. It's got like, I don't know how many thousands of books and stuff. And I was just hitting the random button. I was just like scrolling through. I'm like, okay, whatever. Not cool. And then it popped up with this. And I was like, it sounds really interesting. And I tried it and it works. I haven't tried it in a while, but just check this out. So, and I sent you a copy of the link to your email. So, purpose. This is an exercise to aid in the recollection of dreams through the use of visualization and tactical imagery. It is best performed at times that one begins to fall asleep. Relax, take a few deep breaths, and concentrate on the present sensation of the extremities. Now, I do this to where, you know, when you're laying there and you're not moving, but your nose starts to itch or something, and you do it to where you stop feeling sensation. So allow yourself to feel the gradual decrease in sensitivity of the limbs as you drop off to sleep. Switch your attention rapidly from limb to limb, but block out extraneous thoughts as completely as possible. When nearly all sensation is lost in the extremities, switch your attention to the spine. And this is where it gets weird, okay? Localize your attention to the sensation of each vertebrae. Send a current of energy up from the base very slowly to the top. And you can do this by visualizing a light coming up your spine. So you start to, right, you've already taken your extremities out. You're just ahead. And you just start to, I start to visualize a light going up and down my spine, up and down my spine. From the bottom up. When the current reaches, so send the current of energy up from the base very slowly to the top. When the current reaches the top, visualize the entire spine as a penis and the point where it enters the skull as the sexually oriented orifice of your choice. I didn't picture a vagina or anything up here, but I just when you look at a skull, it's kind of hollow right at the bottom. So I picture Dr. Manhattan's giant blue dick just like entering the bottom of my skull. So concentrate now on the sensation of the spine penis entering the foramen magnum orifice. So foramen magnum, let's see if that's the part I'm talking about. And this one's written out a little bit different than the first one that I saw. So yeah, right. So what I was talking about, the bottom of it. Right here.
It's so got a hole.
It's got a hole, right? If it's got a hole, and yeah. So
then why wouldn't you want to stick a penis in it?
Exactly. The foramen orifice. When bringing the sensation to the conscious level, recall that it is your penis and or your orifice. A great deal of sensation is being generated. Now, I haven't felt the sensation, but I guess this is where the sexual visualization comes is good. In. Yeah. Hold the images and sensations in mind until you do. In fact, fall asleep. Attempt immediately to hold your dream hands in front of your eyes. By practicing this daily, near total dream recall is achieved in a relatively short time. And I shit you not, it sounds bizarre. You don't have to use a penis. Use a bat and... I was going to say someone's asshole, but just use a bat and something else. Like, whatever.
It's still sexual.
A key and a hole. It's still sexual, right? So a key and a hole, whatever. Who cares, right? Use something else. Because people are like, oh, that's gay. It's like, no, whatever. Who cares? Just do... This is... If it's for magic, it's not. It's not gay if it's for magic. Just remember that. So, and then this guy, I guess the guy who sent it, I've sent this out because I found that better access to one's dream often equates to finding a lot of excellent raw material for personalized magical work. And so, insofar as many of the archetypes to be worked with can be found there, it took about 30 days of work before I actually got this functioning correctly. But my own dream recollection is approximately 90% now, and I often remember several dreams from the same night. Also, my lucidity is at around 10% of total. And then this guy is MCP Temple Babble, wild-eyed boy from Free Cloud, Sri Palindrome 15151. So it's probably like some magical secret society that this guy sent that. But I've done it, and I can't explain. I've talked about it on the show, and it works. Like And I read it directly from like the source. I've talked about it before without reading it directly from it. I don't know what it is, Abby, but it works. So,
well, I got ideas about that because you're essentially, you have two meridians in your body, like two big ones. You have the governing vessel and the central, but whatever. I don't know. If you look at an acupuncture chart, you can see. But those are your, like, everybody, when you talk about seven chakras, you know, they think that it just kind of goes one direction, but it doesn't. It goes two directions. You have two. You have two flows, one that runs along your spine and one that's 2 inches in front of your spine. So it's, you know, one moves upward, one moves downward. So you're sitting there focusing on those channels. And when you focus on those channels, you grow them. You make them wider. So, and that's really like your energy. And this chart that you're pulling up right now, this is like key to interpreting a ton of your dreams when your body is trying to talk to you and tell you something. I have one of these hanging on my wall. So that way, if I have a certain body part that's highlighted or an injury in one of my dreams, I literally go find it on the acupuncture chart and I can pick what emotions like ready to come up to heal for me to deal with and a memory, and I can get it out of my body before it causes actual disease. So it's pretty wild. Like your body, your head may not believe in acupuncture, may not believe in the Chinese medicine, but your body knows it. So your body will tell you.
I was going to try acupuncture because I have a lot of gastro problems. I'm lactose intolerant and I'm pretty sure I have IBS or something. Like, I don't know. I got something and I was going to try because a friend of mine who had Crohn's, I believe he was able to, I think, get rid of it for the most part with acupuncture. And he was telling me, he's like, listen, dude. He's like, bro, I tried everything. I tried this. I tried that. And the one thing that gave me relief was acupuncture. And he would go there. And I'm like, dude, does it hurt? Because, you know, they're poking you. He's like,
yeah.
He's like, it can be uncomfortable sometimes. But he's like, listen, bro. And we have I have a local lady here at this salt bar. I don't know if you've tried the salt therapy where you go into the salt room. And
I've done float tanks where it's like 8,000 pounds of salt, but
yeah, that, well, a float, sensory deprivation, I've done that as well. But these rooms, I believe, I forgot which kind of salt they use, but you sit in a room and they're pumping it full of this salt and you sit in the salt and it helps clear your sinuses. It helps, like, literally helps. Yeah. 'Cause think about people who are always in the ocean, right? They get healed. And one time, yeah, I went to Cozumel. And it was on a cruise, and I did the activities that they, the excursions that they offer. And I was talking to one of the Mexican guys, and he's like, yeah, dude, I get sick. And he does the tours, the snorkeling tours. And he's like, once I come into work after being out a day in the ocean, I'm good the next day. 'Cause the salt, right? The salt and alchemy, salt is like one of the most important alchemical components.
Yeah.
Right. The salts.
Well, we are salt. And that's why, like, I feel like part of the lie of Western medicine is like that salt is bad for you and that you shouldn't eat it and that it causes all these issues with your heart and stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I would argue, like, as a bodybuilder, I'm not limited in the amount of salt I can eat. I can eat as much salt as I want. I salt the hell out of my food. I can't add sauces and stuff, but salt is so important. Like, you can't stay hydrated without it, yeah, for one thing. And it thins the blood. So it's actually like, there's so many good things about salt. Table salt, yeah, it's not good, but.
Do you use any salt, particular salt? Like, I use the red kind, the Himalayan.
Yeah, I use the pink Himalayan. When I cook, I use like the Celtic salt or whatever, or Celtic salt. I don't know.
That's the one with like the spices and stuff in it too? Is that the one
Yeah, it's like gray. And yeah, it's like rock salt. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I forgot that you're a bodybuilder, so you would know about dieting and all this stuff. So the foods that you eat, absolutely.
Your body needs salt. It's actually really imperative, and it's bullshit when people you don't need sugar. You don't need processed sugar. That's probably one of the biggest things you could eliminate.
A Dr. Pepper a day is the answer to immortality. That's just what I heard from this lady that was like 100 and something years old. And she'd be, I guess, my great-grandma on my mom's side, or great-grandma, I don't know which one because I'm not that close from my mom's side, but she was the oldest person in the town, and she lived up to 115 years old.
Wow, that's amazing.
On my mom's side. So, and then her daughter, She is 90, I think at this point, 98 years old. And she is like cool. She was still driving. They had to take her license away. Ah. It's like she was 95 years old driving. And she is like clear, like she's good. And it's like, I feel like, because my grandma, my great grandma on my dad's side, she just turned 89 or 90 and she's solid too. And I feel like what they ate a lot in Puerto Rico, at least, is a lot of roots. Mm-hmm. So they would eat a lot of, not potatoes, but I guess you would call it, I don't know the name in English, but a lot of sweet potatoes, because sweet potato isn't like a potato. It's more of a root. That, and they would eat all this other stuff. I forgot the name. I'll have to look it up. But here, a lot of yuca too. They eat a lot of yuca. So I guess those food groups, I don't know what it is about that. And on top of that, I mean, if it comes from the ground and you grow it yourself, it's not being processed by all this garbage that they process it with, you know?
Yeah. That's, well, because standard American diet, it's so bad. Like, there's so many more chemicals than food. Yeah. It's designed to taste good, you know? And that's why none of us really like whole foods. But when I switched to bodybuilding, like, all I eat rice, chicken, turkey. You know, I eat the proteins and my carbs are rice, oatmeal and sweet potatoes. Yeah. So, but it's weird because you switch to food like that and then you get a cheat meal or whatever and you add food back and then you're sick as hell for a couple of days. And I learned you're
bloated.
Yeah. Like I didn't know. I ate potatoes my whole life. Didn't realize I had an issue with potatoes until I didn't eat them for a while. And then I got them back on my meal plan and then I was bloated. So I was like, oh crap. Like just all these foods are not as good as we think they are.
Yeah, my grandma actually sent me a picture the other day of stuff that she had harvested from her garden and they were cooking it up. But again, it's very like, I can't really see it, but it's like very rooty, you know, a lot of roots. So they just boil them, put a little bit of, you know, a little bit of salt and it tastes delicious. Sometimes they eat a lot of cod too, for whatever reason. I've never really liked cod because it's too fishy in my opinion. But they eat a lot of that. And again, they're still alive. They're kicking around. And it's not like, because, you know, you have people who are very old and they're I don't want to like say useless, but they're bedridden or they need a lot of assistance. And my grandma's not like that. Like, yeah,
and they're on 40 medications.
Yes.
And
like, well, that's been my dad ever since he had a heart attack. Like the other day he had sent me to his house to get something and I was looking through his drawers trying to find it and it was just pills after. I was like, oh my. And my dad's got MS too. So they got him on all sorts of stuff. But if they keep you sick, it's better for them because you're producing revenue for, you know, for them.
Exactly though. That's, and I'm really going to, so diet matters, but I'm going to go out on a limb and say that, you know, freaking dealing with your emotions is a huge thing too. Like, I don't know if you've ever looked into like Louise L. Hay, like You Can Heal Your Life stuff. But when I was reading some of her, like, cause she does like affirmations for kids. She healed herself of like cervical cancer. But she gets into the root causes of a lot of these illnesses and stuff. And like breast cancer, my mom died of breast cancer. And that's usually caused by like trauma or judging yourself over your own parenting or your mothering. And I'm like, my mom gave a daughter up for adoption and she was like so ashamed of it. Didn't tell us till I was like 12. And she always judged herself. So it's like, it makes sense that she had breast cancer. And then, you know, like all these other things, like I could put people's illnesses off of what they've told me about their life and it made sense.
So this is making me think of, you ever seen the movie Homunculus on Netflix?
No, I need to watch it. Like, especially after it's like your thing. So
I mean, it's not my thing. It's Paracelsus' thing from the 16th century and the 8th and 9th.
You shed light to it, though. I'm going to give you credit for that, for it being in the zeitgeist again.
Yeah. I guess I was one of the ones to talk about it, right? So that movie is in this astral realm that he's able to see. After something happens to him, and I don't want to spoil it for you. The concept of homunculi in that particular movie is traumas and attachments. And it's almost like what Robert Monroe describes as these, I forgot what he calls it, but these entities on the other side, there's a lot of them that are sexually frustrated, that have like this sexual energy to them, that are trying to always latch themselves onto the people.
Like, and the one that always, a succubus?
Oh, yeah, exactly. And almost like he calls it, right, like those fish that suck onto the other fish. I forget the name of it. I think they're called, whatever, who cares? But you know what I'm talking about.
Parasites, like the parasitic fish, yeah.
Well,
like ones that are on sharks.
I think they're called, yeah, they got like Monray or something like that. Fish, suckers, sharks. Let me find it here. It's got Remora is the name of the fish that I'm thinking about. It's got like it's this fish right here, because I've caught them before. This thing right here, it's got a sucker on the top of its head, and it usually sticks itself onto the...
Oh, wow.
I mean, it kind of looks like a demon, but yeah, you can actually hold them up. You could put your hand on here, and it'll stay stuck to your hand.
Oh, my gosh. It's
the craziest thing ever.
So, that's so creepy.
Yeah, so again, he calls them these entities that whenever he was in the astral realm, you know, this other place, the upside down, universe B, whatever, the mob zone, whatever you want to call it, that all these occultists have talked about, right? Maybe the abyss is this place too, maybe another different part of the landscape. But he said that these things would kind of latch on to him. Like they would just like, he's like the kind of rubbery feeling, they would latch on to him. And in the movie Homunculus from Netflix... Homunculus, Netflix. The homunculus in this movie, they are everyone's deepest, darkest traumas, and they're attached to them on the other side. And he's able to extract them from people, but something happens. So, again, this elemental aspect in how you're saying how maybe perhaps your thoughts and your ideas, after a lifetime of contemplating on them, start to manifest as
physical symptoms in the body.
Physical symptoms of the body.
Yeah. I'm telling you, that's where dreaming is really, you can use your dreams to figure out what you got to heal. And I do it all the time now. Now that I'm aware of it and I see the acupuncture chart, that's one way to do it. But just writing your dreams down and paying attention to the words you use. Like if you do it right when you wake up, and I don't always write them down. Like I'll go to my notes. I do it in notes because I want to read it later, because you can search your notes. So it's so much easier than me writing it in a journal where I have to flip through and find it. Like I literally can keyword and look up pretty much any dream that I had about that thing. Because for a while I was just doing voice memos too. And that's hard to go back and listen to too. If you actually just do text-to-speech and do it in your notes, you can go back and search them. So it's awesome. But it will usually... Okay, so nightmares. Nightmares are almost always what I call a soul fragment, but it's a piece of you that you denied at some point. So or something that you... A memory that was traumatic and you got to heal. So when you have a nightmare, like now my relationship to nightmares has changed, because first it was like it was a lucidity trigger. So I'd have a nightmare and I'd be like, oh, I'm dreaming. And then I would look at the nightmare and then it would kind of like stop and look at me like, what are we doing now? And then I would change the dream. But I realized that that's not me facing my problems. So now when I have a nightmare and I look at it, and sometimes I'm not lucid, but I realize on some level I'm dreaming, and I'll stop. If it's chasing me or whatever, I stop and I look at it and I'm like, what are you trying to teach me? And it usually will do the same thing. It won't say anything. So what I learned was that's a soul fragment. That's a piece of me that, like, because we compartmentalize, right? Anytime you compartmentalize and you break a piece of, like, you chose to do X instead of Y. And so, like, that part of you still exists, the one that made the other choice. Or the part of you that made a bad choice and you don't want to think about that anymore because you're not that person anymore, but that person's still part of you. So Jung always talks about reintegration. And so these are opportunities for you to reintegrate pieces of you, because that's where your power comes from. It's not...
Just want to remind everyone, make sure to check out the show on Patreon, patreon.com/the101podcast. I constantly get emails. Oh, only one episode a week. Yeah, one episode a week for the public. But for as little as $5 a month, you can get up to two, sometimes three, sometimes one episode per day on the Patreon, as well as on the YouTube channel as a member for as little as $5. And there's also on the Patreon over 250 episodes only found on there. There's an extensive backlog of episodes. So check that out. If for those interested, for those asking, make sure to follow the show on YouTube, Juan Juan Podcast. Also, Juan Juan Media. I am going live every Tuesday on there streaming. I also go live on twitch.tv/JuanOnJuanPodcast. So make sure to check me out on there Tuesdays, 6 p.m. Eastern. And make sure to get your copy of the Occultus Mundi Homunculus Owner's Manual, all that good stuff at tjojp.com. Can pick up your copies there or go over to the Ko-Fi. I'm on Facebook, Twitch, Kick, Rumble, all that good stuff. You know where to find it, and enjoy this episode.
Not from denying the person that you were. It's from seeing your shadow, seeing what it was in your life and what it was worth to you and what it taught you, and being able to like live with that as a part of you and forgive it, kind of. So, and I taught this to my daughter too, because she was like, she had PTSD. And so every night for 6 months, she had nightmares. And she was like 16 years old and wanting to sleep in my bed again from this traumatic event that happened to her. And so I was like, you need to start asking those pieces if they're ready to come back. So that's what I started doing, instead of saying, what are you trying to teach me? Because the dream wouldn't say nothing. The nightmare wouldn't say anything. It would just kind of pause and look at me. So I finally just started saying, are you ready to come back? And when it was ready to come back, like my reintegration process was like, my dream persona has sex with myself. So like, because everything, part of your dream is yourself, man, female, animals, it's all an aspect of you. So like my reintegration process, which makes sense, like some people judge me for that, but like, oh my God, but that's how else you draw something back into you sometimes. Like that's a good way to do it, right? But my daughter, when I told her to do it, she had a dream.
You told her to have sex with her.
No, I didn't tell her to have sex with it. I just said, ask it if it's ready to come back. So she had this one dream where like, because my kids are Mexican. So like this Mexican man was chasing her and she was like, he was freaking her out. So she finally turns around and she's like, she like stops, and then he stops and looks at her and she goes, are you ready to come back? And she kind of held her arms out and he goes, are you sure? And she goes, and he gives her the thumbs up. So she just hugged him really tight and squeezed it back into her. And she said the second she did, she had this memory of her dad. Like it was like instant memory of her dad. This guy didn't look anything like her dad, but that's what it had become in her psyche, was like this Hispanic man that was kind of scary and chasing her. And but it was this memory that she needed to heal. So it's really freaking bizarre, but that's the way your brain works. That's the way like your body works. It brings these nightmares up because it wants you to deal with your traumas. It wants you to deal with it, to heal it, to reintegrate it.
I wonder if he was Puerto Rican.
Perhaps.
and that's so interesting, because part of, and we'll get to the dream that I know I segued us somewhere else, but
that's okay.
The I don't know if you've ever read Moonchild by Crowley. And
I've heard about Moonchild, but I've never read it.
And this is perhaps why secret societies embrace the dark caves, because the darkness is kind of sort of acts as that, right? The oldest and greatest fear is the fear of, or the oldest kind of emotion is fear, and the fear of the unknown. And I'm trying to paraphrase the Lovecraftian, the H.P. Lovecraft quote. Fear. Let me read it. So the oldest and strongest emotion of mankind is fear, and the oldest and strongest kind of fear is fear of the unknown. And darkness has been one of those things where it has terrorized mankind since the very beginning. Can you imagine the first people trying to combat the darkness, and probably what they thought of it when they before they invented fire? Right, it's like here comes this entire other world probably casting itself on us. We're not going to be able to see until tomorrow. Can you imagine how terrifying that must have been? It feels like today when we lose our access to our phones. I know a few months back, I think it was AT&T or some company had an outage, and yeah. It was out for like the whole. and people were losing their minds.
I know. Because it's like the fear of the unknown and not being able to connect with people. But like, and that's the thing, is that the darkness is the womb. Like, that's where you go to grow. That's the earth. That's where the seeds germinate. But, and that's actually kind of interesting too, because the art of stalking, that's one of the things that they have you do, is you, for several nights, like the Dream Hackers started this, and you sit in a pitch black room, and you have to like sit with your eyes open in the pitch black, and you just have to feel the dark, so you become the dark.
You start to hallucinate too.
Yeah. And it's like become the darkness. Like, you have to learn to get over your fear of it, to be one with it, and and then they start having you do things where you go out at night in the dark and in the wilderness and stuff. And so you do actual kind of stalking things where you do watch people and stuff like that without trying to be seen, because you're becoming one with the darkness. You're stalking the darkness. It's so weird. I know, but it's like,
so, and this relates to Crowley, because in the book Moonchild, he talks about absorbing this shadow entity that a black magician has sent out, right? So it's the White Lodge versus the Black Lodge, and this shadow watcher, right? This watcher, maybe that's where the, right, where they get the art of stalking watcher, from, the watchers that are, you know, creeping. And they're the ones that were doing the sexual stuff with the, right, with the daughters of men. And I've always said that, right, we come from the womb, and a lot of people are still trying to get back in, right? That's like, it feels like people are always, sex sells, right? So everyone's always trying to have sex with everything. So I've always kid around, I was like, yeah, we're also trying to get back in there again in some sort of way, you know, even after we've come out.
Well, as a woman, I can say most men still want to be on the tit, so I can say that.
Yeah, exactly. So in this story, they send this watcher out to the other watch to spy on them, and the Cyrus Gray, the main character, the hero, the white magician, he loves it to death. Like, he like embraces this shadow entity, and he's like, he absorbed it essentially. He like, it came to him, and he's like, he was trying to justify himself as, you know, he's the great beast 666. He's like, no, he was actually one of the good guys. It's like, okay, whatever. But he's like, yeah, you just have to love it. And once it came into me, I felt all the warmness and tingly feelings of this thing, and it just ceased to exist. And maybe he's talking about that. Maybe what Carl Jung was talking about, that the shadow self, the dark self, reveals all the secrets of reality to you, right? If you're able to find him, if you're able to face him, and then you become this Übermensch, the overman, you know?
Because everyone gets so hung up on like dark versus light, and being like a light worker, and, you know, a black magician, black magic is bad, you know, like, but the thing is that the thing about duality is, this is a dual realm. Duality is the name of the game here. We need it for catalyst, because you don't grow without catalyst. So you have to have the dark to balance the light, because the light's never going to grow. You're not going to grow without all the bad shit. But we have to learn to reintegrate ourselves. It's about accepting your good and your bad, because, and not just accepting it, it's like becoming one again, pulling back your lost fragments.
Yeah, maybe that gets split up in this other realm, right? Because I mean, we can only, and that's part of the homunculus technology, that it's a vessel for things, for cosmic entities, for elementals, for celestial spirits, whatever you want to call them. And that's where I think that the alchemists were also dabbling in this concept of dream analysis and interpretation. And also, Ben Balderson told me one time when we were doing an episode, he's like, yeah, imagine having to stare at a glass vessel for hours upon hours. Of course, you're going to start to hallucinate stuff in it. So that's where we get all of these crazy alchemical artworks that were actually hallucinations of these alchemists, of contemplating on these things for hours on end. And you start to see a story unfold. Now, that's an interesting concept, right? And that's why it's shrouded in imagery. And that's why Carl Jung took it and was like, hey, this is all the stuff, like, this is very similar to all the stuff that I've been sort of talking about. And that's why he got obsessed with alchemy for a while.
And that's same Castaneda calls it gazing. Like, you can do it on anything. Like, usually stuff in nature is the best, but rocks, the sun, a tree,
like scrying.
Yeah. Yeah.
Interesting. So
it's like the secrets of the universe will be revealed to you if you can just sit and gaze.
Well, it's the whole thing with the, what is it, the 100 monkey, or what's that one experiment? The, if you have enough monkeys typing out, that they'll type out all of Shakespeare's works eventually. Monkey typing hypothesis here. Let's see. So monkey typewriter. So it's called the infinite monkey theorem, is a thought experiment that suggests that if an infinite number of monkeys were to randomly hit keys on typewriters for an infinite amount of time, they would eventually type out the complete works of William Shakespeare.
I mean, it would all be in order.
Well, that's the thing. Maybe. Who knows? We're not ever going to really know, but it's an interesting concept to think about. You're saying that nature reveals all the secrets eventually. Yeah. How long? We don't know, but eventually they'll get there.
Yeah.
So I'm not going to pull these up because you told me some of the names needed to be blacked out. So you can read the ones that you want to read. You sent me some dreams here, some weird ones.
Okay. Let me see.
And I've tried, so for the longest time, and I haven't had it happen in a while, but for a very long time, as long as I can remember, even as a kid, I would frequently have sleep paralysis.
Oh, I'm so glad you brought this up. Okay.
And I was never able, so I've tried the lucid dream, I've tried the astral projection. One time I had a waking dream, and that was really as close as I've gotten to be able to control my dreams. Whenever I try to, like, it feels like when you focus on it is when it least happens. And whenever I do wake up in that sleep paralysis, right, where you can't move anything, you feel, I've never seen the shadow entities, how a lot of people say, or like the hag sitting on your chest. The only thing that I've experienced during my sleep paralysis episodes is like the craziest amount of anxiety, like you're gonna die if you don't get out of that feeling. So I had it happen so much that I was able to learn how to get out of it completely. And there was times where I'd get it 2-3 times a night, and I got so good at it that I was able to, like, I kind of peel myself back into my body, and I kind of do like this sort of motion until I can finally move. And sometimes I can like almost move my arm, but not quite. And it's like it's the craziest feeling, but I've never been calm enough. And I always tell myself, no, this next one, I'm gonna be calm. I'm not gonna freak out. And I always freak out, and I'm never able to just like stay in that, because I feel like something's gonna get me and I feel like I'm gonna die.
Well, I'm so excited because I didn't necessarily have the answer to sleep paralysis, and that bothered me because I've had it happen a couple times when I was younger, but it never scared me. It just was really annoying that I couldn't move my body. But, you know, I have friends that have a sleep paralysis demon that sits on their chest, okay? But in The Art of Dreaming, Don Juan tells Carlos that the purpose of dreaming, the whole purpose, is to find and perfect your energy body, which is what I'm talking about when I'm telling you that you're to the meridians and telling you, you know, that your nightmares are traumas you have to process, reintegration, right? Because that perfects your energy body. So like, if we want to get totally magical down the road, that's like bilocation. It's beyond astral projection, it's bilocation, okay? That's the total implication of the whole scenario. But just getting into that, you have to do the recapitulation. So, you know, processing your memories or going through every person in your life and taking the trauma out of the memories with them, like trying to just make it a memory where you don't feel anything when you think of it. So without doing that, your energy body is not perfect. And I learned this through lucid dreaming, because sometimes when I lucid dream, I'm blind, I can't see, but that's because my energy body's not perfect yet. But I've learned though that if I really focus my attention, I can see even when I'm blind. But I never really had the sleep paralysis fear. But it happened to me. So my theory started evolving. I started really thinking about it. I was like, you know what? What if the sleep paralysis demon is your energy body? And it looks so scary because you have a lot of fucking trauma work that you need to do. Like, you need to do a lot of trauma healing. So it looks ugly and scary, like a little old hag. So then, this is like just a couple weeks ago, I kept having this false awakening dream where I thought that my son kept, it was like 2 o'clock in the morning, and my son kept coming in my room and at the foot of my bed, and he was like, mom, mom, like doing jumping jacks and stuff. I was like, and I'm sitting up, I'm going, what the hell? Why are you up? Go to bed, you know? And it happened a couple times. And I kept realizing I was dreaming though. So this is another level of dreaming. Castaneda says that, you know, the dream within a dream within a dream, those are different levels of dreaming. Like, you can go 13 levels deep. And that's why sometimes it takes so long to get back in your body. Well, so I realized I'm still dreaming. So I was lucid at this point. But I thought I was really waking up because it was that crystal clear. It was my room, my kid in my room. I saw the whole thing happen, him open the door, him close the door and go out. But it never happened. So then all of a sudden, when I realized it was a dream, my whole body starts to stiffen. And I was like, oh shit, I was going to sleep paralysis. And I started to get scared because I was like, oh crap, am I going to see the freaking demon? Like, what does my body look like? And I was scared to see it. So I was like, okay, I don't want to feel fear through this. So I closed my eyes, but I felt my body stiffen. And then I felt, and I could see, like, with my eyes closed, I could see these blue hands wrap around my throat. So it did, like, press on my throat and cut my airway. And so then I started, like, almost panicking, and I go, wait a second, can you breathe? And I breathe, and I was like, I can breathe. So I just relaxed into it. I was like, okay, then I'm just leaving my body. This is me, my body, trying to leave my body and put my consciousness into my energy body. So I just allowed it to happen. And then all of a sudden I was in my energy body, and I had this weird tether. Like, everybody talks about it being from your belly button, like this umbilical cord thing. It was from my forehead. I saw it from my forehead to my forehead. And so I could see my body in the bed. I saw myself, and then I walked out to my living room. And then all of a sudden it like cut, and I saw my cord, it shriveled and it kind of turned to this purpley black color. And I was like, why is my cord shriveled? And then all of a sudden I was back in my body and I was convulsing, and I went back into my body.
So as the sleep paralysis demon's choking, you're just like,
daddy, chill.
Right? Because
yeah, it's good, man.
So
it feels good. I like it.
This is interesting because one of the concepts of Kenneth Grant, and this ties into the Lovecraftian aspect of it, right? The Necronomicon, this book that some people believe was pulled from this other realm, right? This other, I don't know if
probably I'm sure not. It was, so it's, I believe it.
So yeah, that's what some people believe. And I'm sure you've never seen this show, but there's a show called 30 Coins. It's a show from Spain on HBO. And in one of the episodes, they pull a book from this mirror, right? So they can see it in the mirror, but they can't see it in the reality that they're in. But they're able to manipulate it in the reality that they're in, and they're able to eventually like pull it through to their side. And I've had people tell me that they know of people who have these sort of books from these other realms. Like, I don't know if it's source trust me, bro, but again, who knows? I mean, I think anything's possible. But one of the things that ties, you know, Lovecraft, which allegedly was inspired from his nightmares, from his night terrors, right, and the whole Cthulhu mythos, which I believe was our entities trying to break in through our reality through the use of dreams, through people. They use people as portals, if you will.
Yeah.
And I think that when it's transferred over to writing, letterism, it amplifies the magic, the sorcery, right? And so Kenneth Grant talks about that these great old ones, these elder things, these greater gods on the other side that they call them, that if we were to witness them in this state that we're in, they do appear grotesque because we're not able to handle what they truly look like. So to us, when we see them, they look grotesque, but that's because it's how you were mentioning, what if that's our self or part of us and it's scary, but because you're not on the right frequency. And maybe he's trying to pull you out when he puts you in sleep. Like, I don't know. I mean, it's just something interesting to talk about, right? Where I'm seeing like the connections between.
That's my favorite thing is when I've got this over here and you've got this knowledge over here and we can like oh shit, this
is wild. They write about it. I mean, they talk about it. It's like, yeah, I forgot which book, because Kenneth Grahame's one of those guys that also wrote a bunch of books. And it talked, you know, he talked about the mob zone, this other realm that you're able to interact in and look at, right? Stranger Things is one of these things that is based on the Montauk experiment. And then when you remember that Monroe was working with the CIA at one point for remote viewing, and in the other realm, he saw this entire team that was on standby. The president has people in the astral realm protecting him. Like, who knows about it? Is the military industrial complex, are they onto this? Are they weaponizing this? If our government is doing it, what other governments are doing it? Like,
that's the dream hackers. So they're this Russian team that got paid. They're all IT people. They were paid by an outside source to hack Dreaming. So they applied computer hacking skills to Dreaming, and that's where they all got into Carlos Castaneda. So they actually took all the sorcery stuff and they freaking streamlined it, and they made it way more modern, and they were able to freaking do stuff that was unprecedented, really. But what you're like, that's one thing, is that they were approached by every three-letter agency from all over the world, because it is being weaponized. You know, the powers that be, we call them the cabal. In their books, they call them the Legion. They say that, you know, they're in every, even your local governments and stuff. Like, they're represented by the local governments. So they have these protectors or guardians, what Castaneda calls inorganic beings. They don't have an organic body, but they do protect you in the dream realm, and not just in the dream realm, in the physical 3D as well.
And check this out. So I pulled this up. It's the Dream Hackers Movement and the Cult of Castaneda. The Cult of Castaneda. It's interesting here where he's talking about, I noticed two main differences between the Russian and English discussions online. Firstly, while Western dreamers typically distinguish between lucid dreams and out-of-body experiences, Russian dreamers largely argue that out-of-body experiences do not exist, or that they are a type of dream. This doesn't mean much on the surface, as we don't have a fantastic working definition of what a dream is in the first place. Michael Raduga's Russian-based program, The Phase, seems to categorize and describe these phenomena in a less bounded way, perhaps reminiscent of Celia's green metaphoric experiences. However, there does not seem to be enough of a difference between lucid dreams and out-of-body experiences to warrant a separate classification. Interesting. And also interesting was, I don't know if you've seen this movie, and now you're going to want to see it because it's a fantastic movie and it's got Daddy Cage in it. But Dream Scenario.
I've not seen this.
You got us. It's by A24, which A24 makes cursed movies. So just be careful before you watch this.
Use your guardian when you watch it.
Okay. Use your homunculus, but check it out because it's all about what we're talking about. All right. Like, it's crazy and it's pretty funny. So just check it out. And it came out recently, 2023. And it's fantastic. But yeah, watch it, because it's all about this, about dreams. And you mentioned the dream hackers. Well, there's something kind of sort of like that in this movie.
That's awesome. Well, and the dream hackers, like whatever that was just saying, just read that. I sent you some of their books, which are from their forums there.
Oh, is that what you had sent me?
Yeah. And so they're not translated well, because they're translated from Russian. But I had a friend actually take one, actually from Lithuanian, because the original book is in Lithuanian. So I had a Lithuanian friend actually translate it for me in English before we found those, the English versions of that, because there was no English version. But very powerful stuff. That's where I've talked about Patience of the Medici, and I will be teaching it soon. But it's a concept that they learned from John Dee in the dream space. So it's all wild.
The who? Yeah.
The dream hackers. They met John Dee in the dream space. One of them was a librarian in real life. So one of his memory palaces and a place that he likes to frequent in the dream space is the library. And if you notice that you can't read in the dream space, this is where AI, this is why it seems like AI, because AI doesn't get words right, right? Mm-hmm. So like when you're reading, like it seems like the words keep changing.
I've never read in my dreams, and I've never seen phone. I've never read in my dreams.
Wow.
I haven't gotten to that level of lucidity, I guess, in my dream to where I'm able, like, I'm Superman. Here we go. You know, like, I haven't been able to do
but
that.
You don't have to be lucid. I mean, it just in a regular dream, you've never done it. Like, a regular dream, when you read, like, you'll see Walmart, and Walmart, like, will.
Not that I remember.
Owen always says his changed to Wallerock or something like that. Like, it just changed to some weird word because a stop sign will say stop for a minute, but then it'll all of a sudden say something completely different. Like, words don't stay the same. So that's one of the gates of dreaming, is to shift your eyes and go back to it and try to stabilize the dream. So stabilize whatever it was, like objects, because when you turn your head and look back, sometimes they'll change, but words almost always do. And numbers and stuff like that, they'll shift themselves around to be something different. So the dream hackers found that the trick to reading in a dream is to tell the dream to read aloud to you. And so this guy is a librarian. He's in the library. He tells the dream to read aloud to him, and he used memory palaces so he can memorize every single book that he got from the dream space and was able to write them down when he got back. So in one of his dreams, he saw John Dee. So he followed John Dee to John Dee's library. And in John Dee's library, there was not just books. He even had a computer. So he was able to go through, like, John Dee's library and brought back a lot of information, including this magical system called the Patience of the Medici.
The Patience of the Medici?
Mm-hmm.
Never heard of
it. It's a way of... Oh, and you won't find anything in English on it. Or very little, and you won't learn how to do it in English. Like, I learned how to do it. I taught myself, I had a dream coven experiment, and we all kind of read some of the dream hacker stuff, and we figured it out together. So it was a team of us, but it's wild. So
interesting connection, because John Dee, part of that imaginal theater is what I called it, is the speculation that John Dee actually influenced the construction of Shakespeare's Globe Theater.
Sure he did.
So that's, you know, you're talking about the dream, this dream cartography, this dreamscape, and then John Dee potentially having some connection to that. And
is all dream hackers too.
The De Medici, right? The Black Widow, Catherine De Medici, the Black Widow, they called her. The Dragon Queen, I think, is the name that they used for her. But yeah, they invented gelato with an alchemist. An alchemist invented gelato.
Wow.
Yeah. So, anyways, let's get to these dreams and see what we can pull from this. I don't know which one you want to read first.
I'm going to read this weird one because we're talking about the body. So this is an example of paying attention, because your subconscious is telling you 100 different ways sometimes in one dream, one message. It's just one message. So yes, this is my dream, and it's weird, and I'm embarrassed, but here's the thing. When you're talking to me, like, you never have to tell me, like, it was a dream. I would never do this in real life, because I know that. So if you ever want me to interpret a dream for you, you never have to tell me that you wouldn't have sex with your dad or something weird like that. Like, I already know, okay? It's a dream. They're freaking weird. So anyway,
So with that said, no judging.
With that said, okay, so I realize I'm on a ley line. When I put my hands near the ley line, they disappear. Ley line. Think about that word, okay? I notice that it's bending everything on the line. I end up having, like, anal sex on the line, which just kind of sounds like a pun now. Laid on the ley line. But as I'm leaving, there's two men, and I want to say they were, like, had shaved head bald. Not, like, slick, but it was buzzed, and they're wearing sunglasses. And there's banging, all kinds of banging on the ley lines. Banging. Do you hear that word? Ley lines, anal sex, like getting laid on the ley line, banging. And really, like, this isn't a sex dream, if like the anal sex part, but really, like, but keep listening. They're just noises. They sound closer and further away. And I can tell people are throwing stuff. And I looked away, and the two guys were standing near me, and I could tell that, you know, they were like spiritual type beings. And I see and hear three rockets go up, and it's actually like fireworks. Rockets, fireworks. And they go into the shape of a triangle, and it was just odd. I was just watching them blow up, like, oh. And one of them started going down into the earth, and it kind of looks like that penis-shaped rocket that Jeff Bezos had, and it was drilling into the Earth. One of them's going to the sky, into the air, and I felt like that had all the significance. I'm not exactly sure why. Well, reading it back, I'm just laughing at the whole thing, because it's like penis-shaped rocket going up into the sky, fireworks, like drilling down into the Earth. It's all really, my body was probably telling me it needed to get laid. Like, that was all it was trying to tell me. Like, it's a need. Your body, it's a physical need, and you need to do this. Like,
I can't stop thinking about, everything reminds me of her.
Yeah, banging. Like, yeah. I mean, it, and then, like, it's so, it's important the words you choose. So when somebody's telling me a dream, I'm listening to all the words. Like, I want to hear all of that. I want to hear what directions you're turning. I want to hear, you know, was the person on the right or left of you? Was, what were the sounds you were hearing? What were you feeling? Because all of it matters. The words that you choose when you're telling me are important. But that's an example of, my body wasn't able to communicate it to me, so it's telling me in my dreams, like, it's time, girl.
And also the tunneling is part of the, I don't know if you've ever done the active imagination with Jung. He talks about like tunneling. So you're supposed to, how you were, you mentioned earlier, like a dream within a dream. Well, he encourages tunneling. So you go into a tunnel, you drop down to that next level, you do something else, then you keep tunneling into the, again, I've never tried it like that far, but that's part of the technique, I guess. I don't know.
Was that in dreaming or like meditation or?
I think it's an active imagination. Okay. So again, closing your eyes, kind of sort of not necessarily dreaming. I guess you'd have more control over it, because that's one of the things about memory. You have more control over active memory because you're awake. And like, for example, if you're in a sensory deprivation tank, I don't know about you, but I've experienced it to where it feels like you can manifest things a lot quicker, and not just like manifest like, oh, here I think of Dr. Pepper and here I have a Dr. Pepper, but your imagination, you know, when you're thinking about things, it feels like it could become real for a second. And
yeah, it's the, what I call the liminal space, because it's like you're conscious, but you're dreaming.
Yeah. The one of the examples I've used is, I was one time in the tank, and right, you're floating there, you're naked, right, you're vulnerable, and I started thinking about, and I hate this, like one of my fears, and not because I get seasick, but one of my fears is I'm afraid of heights, right? Like, and this happened later in life. I wasn't afraid of heights at first, but it happened later on in life. And one of the fears I have is, you know, when you're in the ocean and you can't see the bottom, right? So you're essentially at the top of a really far drop, but that darkness at the bottom of the ocean. And so when I was in the tank one time, I started thinking of like this lake that I go fish a lot. And at the bottom of these lakes, there's like alligators, right? We're in Florida. So I started to almost freak out, because I'm like, what if there's an alligator in here with, you can't feel the bottom of the tank.
Yeah.
You're just a floating head because you can't feel your body. Everything starts to mold because the point of sensory deprivation, they strip you of your senses, and you can't tell where your head and where your body starts, right? So I start freaking out. And it's like I was trying to launch myself out of the lake. I'm trying to like go from the lake up, you know, up in the sky. But I kept thinking of like, oh, and then I kept going further down and further down. And I'm like, down there is the bad stuff. I want to go up. You know, I want to get away from the stuff that the darkness. You can't tell what's in the darkness. You can't tell. And I don't even know how many times I can't even count on my hand how many times I've been trolling around the lake. And if you don't see them, you look at the bottom and there's just gators just chilling at the bottom, just like, it's crazy. So imagine that in complete darkness in some, I'm in this freaking tank where your mind just goes wild. I'm trying not to.
Did you yell or anything?
No, I didn't. I was able to. And the one that the tank that I would use was like a coffin. It was like a coffin. It was I don't know if they're open anymore, but there was like a nice one that was all white and, you know, had like lights on the inside of it. And then there was like the, you know, those freezers at the gas stations that, you know, just open up where you get the ice. Yeah. It was like that. It was like one of those doors. And that was like the big boy tank. It was completely black on the inside. And it just felt unfriendly. And that was the big boy tank. You know, people usually did the other one was like a clamshell, like white and pretty and all this stuff. And it's like, no, if you want to face the darkness, go into the good tank. Because it seals better than the other one. And the whole thing about tanks is the better they see, you know, it's all humidity game. So eventually you start to sweat. So the white one, I would feel the air on my toes from where it would seal. Right. So that would take your concentration out. So you're laying there for 2 hours or whatever it is, and you start feeling the AC creep into your feet. So you start to notice your feet. And the other one, nothing would get in. There was no air tickling your feet. So you were able to really immerse yourself in the experience. To where you'd fall asleep. You know, the point was to fall asleep and see what happens. And I've had some trippy experiences in sensory deprivation completely sober, and I always tell people, go at least your first three times you're gonna be freaking out, because I was freaking out because anxiety, you don't know what to expect, right? You're in this tank naked, you don't know if somebody's gonna come in, and you know you're exposed, whatever. It's like, go the first, and then once you get used to it, then you're able to really do the exploring, and like I said, you're able to really let your imagination just go wild. But you got to keep it under wraps, or else it can go to some dark places and those things start to manifest themselves with you within that tank sometimes. I mean, it gets scary.
I know this one that was like it wasn't enclosed. It, like, the whole room just turned black, but it was like a big round pool. So it was kind of awesome because I'm claustrophobic. So the idea of being in a like sealed box freaked me out.
Let me show you the one.
I learned I had sleep apnea from doing it because I kept like getting so relaxed and into the meditation. And then all of a sudden, like every couple of minutes, I go, does I forget to breathe?
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, shoot. So after that, I made an appointment and did a sleep study. And sure enough, I've got severe sleep apnea. So
this is the one I was telling you about. This is like the clamshell when it's all pretty. It's got lights in it.
It's kind of pretty.
And there's this one. Boom. Like, this is the big boy. So it looks like a freaking coffin. So you're in here, you know, floating around. It's completely black. It doesn't have lights or anything. And this
freaks me out.
Yeah, this is the one here. You were going to outer space. Okay. Like, wherever outer space is, this is where this will put you. Okay. I know space is fake and gay, but literally this was it.
And that's how you get there, though.
That's how you get there. Yeah. Again, if
not in Jeff Bezos' penis shaped rocket.
And that one too, probably. But you know, you take, this is not medical advice, but you take a heavy hit of, you know, some indica or something, and sayonara. Okay. Because you're gonna go to places that's usually you
other
know,
worlds
other world yeah other the mob zone. You'll wake up in the mob zone and talk to the shadow people. But yeah, the place I used to go to is not open anymore, so I haven't gone in a long time. I think they closed it down when 2020 happened, so it's been a minute.
Yeah.
But before then, my first ever episode was actually about float tanks with the guy.
I listened to your first episode.
Yeah. Once upon a time, I had gotten out of the flow and I was like, hey, dude, I'm thinking about starting a podcast. And the guy there was cool. And I talked about my experience with that. That was like my bro Rogan days, where he would talk about sensory deprivation, all this stuff. And it's one of those things I tell people to try, because it does help you, right? It helps your body decompress, and it's good for, we're so
detoxing,
bombarded. I wonder how the Wi-Fi in our houses and this, you know, being locked into the electrical grid affects our dreams, because part of the sensory deprivation is disconnecting from everything, that stimuli.
Dude, I bought this thing, and it could be total bullshit, but I bought this thing. It's called a Soma Vedic, and it was like way too much money. I'm not gonna lie. It was like
a what?
It's a Soma Vedic, SOMAVEDIC. And they sell these devices. They have like crystals and like oils and stuff in them. And some of them are supposed to restructure water. And I got the one that restructures water. Yeah, that thing. The green thing in the corner. So
$1,000 for this thing?
I'm telling you, I know. But I was like, okay, I got to do something about all this fucking, like, 5G network and shit. Because this one's supposed to mitigate 5G. And, like, you can see all the studies. It allegedly works. And it restructures water. Well, the first night I get it, I plug it in next to my bed. And, like, you can put your bottle of water by it. And you just set it by, or, you know, your glass and set it there for, like, 20 minutes. And then it's supposed to restructure the water. Well, I was like, I get it. The day I got it, I was like, you're such a dumbass. I cannot believe you just spent that much money on this thing. Why did you do that? But I lay down and I close my eyes and I'm wide awake. You know, my eyes are just closed. And all of a sudden, like, you know, you kind of see, like, I would say it's kind of like static, you know, when you close your eyes. But it started doing this thing where I had a star and fractals and it looked like a kaleidoscope with my eyes closed. And I was like, what the hell? So I opened my eyes. I sat up. I was like, what is going on here? And so I lay back down and I closed my eyes and it did it again. I was like, what the fuck? So third time, sorry, I'm cussing. I hope it's okay.
Very good.
Third time it did it again. And I'm like, so we're 70% water. It's restructuring the water. So I do believe that it works. So I've got it like kind of in the central part of my house. So that way, hopefully we're not getting it as bad as everyone else.
That's the thing, right? So if these frequencies do affect water on a molecular level, like all the way down to its molecules.
Yeah.
Imagine what it's doing to us as we sleep, because we are, right, 75% water or whatever that figure is, and how that might be inhibiting us from having more dreams. Maybe the people of back then, and not even that far back, even these alchemists, because I've experienced to where when I'm looking at alchemical art, I believe it's meant to open up your consciousness, like meant to open up your mind. And maybe that's why when after you watch a scary movie, you have nightmares, right? Because you're tuning into that frequency and then you mix everything else. I mean, it's like Robert Monroe and when he's in this other world and he's talking about being attracted to the transformers, like of the electricity. And he's like, I wonder how that, you know, affects the, if we're attracted to that. And one of the interesting things is that these towers, I have a buddy of mine who works on them. He says that bees and wasps and different like critters are attracted to the whatever frequency these things are emitting, and they also have to turn them off when they're working on them, or it'll literally cook you, like it'll make you sick from working on these towers while they're on. So sometimes they have to shut them off to work on them and do maintenance on them. So
creepy.
They're pumping this into the air.
Yeah, and that's the thing. So it's like, because people are like, oh, you should unplug your internet at night and all this stuff. And I'm like, are you kidding me? I could pick up every house around me is internet. So yeah. I can do whatever I want in my house and it's not going to matter. I'm still exposed to it all the time. So that's where I was like, okay, I'm going to
buy this
stupid device for $1,000.
You can't see it, but my router's got like two huge antennas. I got the thick plug on mine. So it's pumping my house full of I got the 6G connection now on this router.
Oh,
so,
period.
Yeah, that's that Nephilim frequency right there. I'm just getting those Nephilim beams as I'm laying down in bed trying to astral. Maybe that's why I can't.
Any latency issues.
Yeah, maybe that's why I can't astral, because my router is using Nephilim technology and it's suppressing my ability to jump out of body. Maybe I'll turn it off one of these nights and try.
You need to do your Pythagorean thing, like, because that'll help you too. Just recapitulating. Play your day backwards and then play it forward.
Or the skull fuck method.
Well, yeah, but I'm telling you, do the other one because it's good.
Yeah, and for those that listen to the method, try it out and report back. Shoot me an email or something. And
I'm excited about that, by the way, because I thought when you said it before, you did it when you first woke up to remember your dreams, but you do it before you go to bed, and that's key. Because I was like, I never remember to do that when I first wake up. So,
and I'm telling you, it's, because again, I talk about a lot of things or we're talking about something that's experience based, like, oh, I felt this, I felt that, and you can't really prove that to people, but it's like, just try this, just try.
Yeah, it's not hard to do. Just try it.
It's not hard to do. It's weird, right? But get past the weird stuff and focus on it. And I promise you, when I first experienced it, I'm like, I woke up the next day, I'm like, I remembered like that, you know, that dream. To the point to sometimes I'll remember bits and pieces of my dream and I'll just write it down in my, because my phone's got the stylus, so I'm able to just take the stylus out and then I'm able to just like write, right? Oh, it's not doing it now, but yeah, there you go. So I'm able to just write stuff and I'll just take notes sometimes. Like I'll wake up and I'll take notes and it's like on the fly type of thing. And I've been able to remember some concepts that are pretty cool from my dreams. But like entire dreams themselves, where I'm reading a book and that, like, I haven't been able to do any of that. Maybe it's like how Robert Monroe said, only certain people can do it. Maybe Rh negative people can, like, who knows? Or maybe you need to practice it, right?
Collecting your energy and then intentional dream recall. Like, you have to actually, like, if you can't remember, if you write down, something will happen today, right? Like, write it in your phone. Something will happen today and it'll trigger my dream recall. And then it might be 7 o'clock that night. But somebody will say something and you're like, oh shit, I just remember my dream. And I'm telling you, it's just writing it down. Like, I don't remember it yet, but I will remember it later. Something along those lines. You'll remember it.
Interesting. Well, Abby, this is great. This is interesting conversation. And maybe for the next time we get together, we'll read some of those emails. Hopefully people try it and write in and tell us about their experience in the comments or wherever else. Do you have anything else you want to leave the listeners with before we get out of here?
Come check us out on Friday on Secret Society of Good Guys.
Friday's Secret Society of Good Guys at, what, 12 o'clock, right? Super late. It's way past my bedtime.
Yeah, that's Wednesday's going to be prime time. So we plan to have some guests on Wednesday nights. And so that's a little bit more accommodating.
I've been on that show, though, the Secret Society. I was on it with Donut that one time, and I think I've been on it a couple other times too.
Yeah, so. I remember you were on New Year's episode for sure, and then
yes,
yep,
awesome. Well, Abby, thank you for being here, and as always, everyone, make sure to check out the show, tjojp.com. The Ko-Fi has the Occultist Monday, the comic books. All that good stuff. Make sure to check those out on there. I've been streaming every Tuesday at 6 p.m. on Twitch and on the backup YouTube channel, Juan Juan Media. And links will be down in the description. Thank you, everyone. And stay safe in your astral dream travels, skull fucking, whatever is going on. And catch you on the next one on the other side. Bye-bye. We'll be right back.